Hi, everybody. We want to thank our sponsor, Legion M. They are a wonderful company. We love working with them. You can go to their website, Legion M. They're also on all the various socials. They do really fun meetups. You can talk to directors. You can become a part of the projects they choose. They even have a program right now where you can help them find great movies to support. So go to their website to learn more. We also want to remind you that we have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies. Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies, and with us is somebody who knows as much about movies as anybody on the planet.
No.
It's a true story.
No, really. But you have... You've proven more than once, Sam Levine, that you have an extraordinary memory, as well as knowledge beyond just...
It's very sweet of you to say, and it will come as no small surprise. That starts because of you. Your Maltin movie guide was the Bible in my home growing up. Mm-hmm. There were multiple editions. There was one for every room where there was a TV. And if something came on, this is back pre-internet days, if something came on, oh, I know this movie. Oh, who directed this? Oh, who's that other lead in it? Get the guide. And we'd grab the guide and we'd start digging. Oh, that's who it is. Oh, that's right. Oh, John Ford did this one. Oh, my God, I haven't seen this in 30 years. And that's how it started for me, was learning movies like other people learn sports statistics.
But you also know all your sports statistics, too.
I only know baseball.
There's a lot in there, Sammy.
Well, yes, there's a lot in there. I don't know what happened to me. Oh, I do. I didn't go to college.
Hey!
So I don't have, you know, Psych 102.
Would
cluttering
say,
up anything.
Would you say that you have a photographic memory?
You know, I don't. I wouldn't use that term exactly because I feel like people have a photographic memory. I reserve that for like the Mary Lou Henners of the world.
Well, she has more than a photo. She's
right.
There's a name for her,
yeah,
her condition.
There is a name.
What it is.
Oh yeah,
crazy?
I can't remember it. No, but it is. You're right. She does have.
There's a specific condition that enables her to remember every day. Yeah. She's
like
lived.
Every minute detail of every day she's ever lived.
Yeah.
So I wish I had that. In my mind, that's what a photographic memory is. Mm-hmm. I have a memory that I do a lot of mnemonic devices when I memorize things.
Uh-huh.
That's how I memorize lines when I'm working as an actor.
Uh-huh.
And so I guess that just sort of stays with me. Like I'll think of actors. I often think of actors by first name and not last name.
Huh. Interesting. Interesting. I didn't give you the proper buildup, though, Sam.
Oh.
The way I describe you is parents are not supposed to pick a favorite, and mine did.
Oh, yours did.
My mother and my father choose you over me every freaking time.
I find this
and
very
that
hard
is,
to believe.
That is hurtful, I'll tell you now, but it's fine. Now you go on ahead.
Well, I was just going to say.
Your favorite son, go on.
No. Sam worked his way into the hearts of millions as one of the cast members on Freaks and Geeks.
Mm-hmm.
The gift that keeps on giving.
It really is.
Oh, man.
It really
thanks
is.
Thanks to Judd Apatow and company.
Sure.
And you are also a member of the cast of a little film called Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, I am indeed.
Written and directed by one Quentin Tarantino.
Not familiar with him.
Tell him they spelled the words wrong. Did anybody?
I believe that was his choice. What's funny about that to me is everybody knows Bastards is misspelled with
yes,
an E.
Yes, but they don't know Inglourious.
A lot of people always forget that Inglourious is also not spelled properly.
Yeah. Was it for dyslexic people like me? Was it supposed to make us feel better?
No. It's I believe the idea, and people will come at me if I'm wrong here, but I believe the idea why both words are spelled incorrectly was on the bat. The idea was neither Donowitz nor Aldo Rain were intellectual people.
Okay.
And, they were just stone cold killers. And so, you know, reading and writing was not what they were concerned with.
Okay.
And beyond that, and I'm surprised he doesn't talk about this more often, you know, Quentin will handwrite his scripts. before he has somebody type them up. And he is a terrible speller.
That makes it so much better.
And he will tell you, he's not ashamed of it. He's not ashamed. Oh, yeah, no, I don't spell. I know the word I'm thinking of. I don't know if I'm spelling it right, but I don't care because I put the word down and everybody knows what I'm trying to say. And that's the most important thing. And so I think maybe that also fed into it a little bit.
That's so cool.
And Sam lives an alternate life as a stand-up comedian.
I did for a long time. I did stand-up for 10 years, the strangest 10 years of a person's life, 12 to 22.
Oh, my gosh.
When most people are just thinking about getting into it. I was a very strange kid, and I had I lived right outside of Manhattan, and so I had two parents, mostly my mother, who was very game to take me into Manhattan on a daily basis, first for auditions, and then for stand-up comedy sets at various clubs all over the city. And I had a manager, and he had has a son, Elon Gold, who's a very well-known comedian, especially so in New York at the time. And so Elon vouched for me, and then Jeff Ross vouched for me and helped get me stage time. And it was terrific fun, and I did it for 5 years in New York and then 5 years upon coming out to California. And then when I was about 22, I just sort of I fell out of love with it. It was very different out here than it was back.
Well, a lot of people fall out of love with it, but they keep doing it.
That's true. but for me, the reason I stopped was I had started doing it to help sort of make a name for myself so that I could get my foot in the door auditions-wise. Mm-hmm. But by 22, I was working steadily as an actor, knock on wood, and I felt like, well, if I keep doing stand-up at this point, it's because I want to put out specials and albums and tour. And I didn't really want to do any of that. Mm. So that's sort of why I stopped doing it. And also, I'll tell you straight up, I was only okay. I was not a great comedian when I took the stage. I was perfectly fine. But I never saw myself, in line with any of the comedians who I revered as amazing.
Such as?
Such as Patton, Oswald, Sarah Silverman. Mm-hmm. A few people we're not allowed to talk about anymore. those names. And I thought, I will never be on that level. And so I didn't want to say, I don't want it to sound like, oh, I got discouraged because I'd never be that good. But it was, I didn't feel terrible about it because I had success elsewhere at the time.
Yeah.
Right.
You do, though. You have fantastic timing.
Oh,
and I know that because I've seen you on stages so many times with Doug Benson, but also different shows that you do. Mm-hmm. And my God, you can get an audience.
You're very sweet.
Well, I love you. Yeah,
and I love you too. And you're very
right
sweet.
Out of the
and
palm.
I have toyed with it over the last several years about getting back in. I've done a couple of teeny little guest spots here and there at my friend shows that I don't tell anyone I'm doing it, and I'll try out some stuff, but it's a huge commitment.
Oh, no. I'm saying I think you get the best of both worlds.
Oh, thank you.
I think that by doing what you do with these live shows, people get to see how funny you are without it having to be all you and on a stage and that kind of pressure.
Oh, sure. No, I agree. And thank you. No, I love doing shows with Doug Benson on the road when we do the podcast on the road. There's no safer place to be than on stage with Doug.
It's true.
Because, it will always be a funny show no matter what.
And you were my entree, so to speak.
Oh, indeed.
Yes.
To the podcast Doug Loves Movies.
Oh, yes.
Because it was you who suggested to Jesse, or floated the idea in front of Jesse, that would I be willing to come on the show and play the Leonard Maltin game?
Named for you, sir.
That's right. And I said, I'm worried about Doug, because the thing is, if you don't know him, and I would also say it's been a few years now. And as he's getting older, and I mean in a good way, he's a bit more tame.
Mm-hmm.
And when you asked me, this is, God, how many years? I have no sense of time. But
we've got to be at least 10 years, I think.
Jesus.
Because we
can't
had...
really be, my goodness.
Because we had you on the Kevin Pollak chat show.
Yeah.
Yes.
In our first year.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was Doug we had on the first year, and then you showed up. I think it was the other way around. We had you as the guest, and then Doug showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in our first year, so that would have been 2009.
That's nuts.
So, and we'd already established. So, yeah, we're going back over 10 years.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, you are the new 21st century Ed McMahon, if anyone understands that reference anymore, you are the sidekick, shall we say, to the very funny Kevin Pollak on his 18th or 19th year.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way.
Of doing Kevin Pollak's chat show.
We had an amazing 10-year run. We started in 2009, and we closed out the podcast earlier this year on our 10th anniversary. I think we're about 450 shows in.
Wow.
And they were all wonderful. And yeah, it just became a too much of a labor of love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For everyone involved.
I know that. Been there, done that. I can actually say that. Yeah.
But with Doug, I didn't know what to expect.
Right.
And I didn't want to put my dad in a position where he was going to get made fun of. Mm-hmm. Or I just didn't know. I didn't know I was going to get. But we both, we trust Sam. Mm-hmm. So as long as he goes on with you, we know he's going to be okay.
Yes, indeed.
And I think we made you do that 3 times or something like that.
At least.
And then one day you weren't available Doug wanted my dad. And I said, okay. We've met him. He's been very nice to you. And we know he's a real diehard movie buff. And they'd always had good conversations.
Oh, sure.
But I remember the first time we went without you, that was like without the safety net. And it was still great.
Yes.
And from then on, you and Doug love each other.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very funny to watch you. In the same way watching the two of you is hilarious because you're just nerding so hard together.
Mm-hmm.
And you add Doug into that mix, it's the same thing.
I agree. I'm bummed that I don't get to do Doug's podcast with Leonard as often anymore. Because we're both so busy, Leonard.
Yes.
And so is Doug.
All of you, though. I mean, you really are. You're always somewhere and you're always working on something.
I tell you, I'm a very lazy person.
That's a lie.
And it's not a lie. I am one of the laziest people I know. And so when I am wildly busy for weeks and weeks and months on end, you know, and people are like, oh, how's it going? Really busy. You enjoying it? Not really anymore. No. No. Doing well. Things are great. Can't complain. But oh my God, so much every day. And there are people who thrive like that.
Yes.
I am not one of them. I need a nap.
You're speaking to a pro napper, and I attempt but never do very well with it. But oh man, it is a lot.
It's a lot. I'm going to be in Sacramento this weekend, and for a convention, and they asked me to come in early so that I could do press the Friday morning before. And I said, oh sure, yeah, like 8-9 a.m. kind of thing. Oh no, we're going to have a car pick you up at 6 a.m. Yeah, you're going to be on the 6 a.m. the local newscast. Hmm. So I'll be doing that this Friday morning in Sacramento. I don't know when this drops, but
Friday morning. It's a good look at the Lord.
Some Friday. Watch
some Friday.
If you're in Sacramento, watch the local Friday news.
So was Freaks and Geeks the first? I can't even say big thing because
it wasn't
in the sense of when it first started.
When it first started, it was not a success, but big in terms of the size of the role and what it entailed, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'd done a couple of commercials. I'd been on an episode of One Life to Live, but Freaks and Geeks was my big break, as they say.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And precious, none of you could have foreseen that it would have the staying power.
Absolutely not.
It was proved to have.
No. I mean, I knew it was good because I was a TV watcher.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember reading the pilot script even before I had the job. I remember reading it and thinking, man, this is so good. I would watch the crap out of this show. And so when we were shooting it too, I always got the feeling what we're shooting is just, it's so good.
Mm.
And so I didn't think it would have the staying power 20 years after the fact that it does. I just thought, oh, people will talk about this however long it goes on for. Like, oh, it was a good show. But for it to still be as popular, more popular, considerably more popular 20 years later, that's something.
Also, if it had been that popular, it would have continued.
Yeah,
I think so.
Right?
And also, it doesn't hurt that so many of the main cast have gone on to become big stars.
This show's got to be a record, honestly,
yeah.
To have that many people in the cast be successful and working.
Oh, yeah.
Because
for those uninitiated.
Oh, so here we go.
Yes.
Seth Rogen, James Franco, Linda Cardellini, Jason Segel, Busy Phillips, Martin Starr, John Francis Daly, and me. Those were
is
your,
that all?
Those are your eight main casts. Well, you got Joe Flaherty and Becky and Baker, of course.
No,
it's, and not to mention all of our amazing guest stars and recurrings.
Oh, everybody and yeah, everybody.
Everybody was on that show.
But, I mean, every single one of you is successful and working as an actor. Every single one.
Yes, it is. It like, is. Some to more wild successful degrees than others, but I'm not complaining. Oh, it has been 20 years, and I've always had work, and I'm amazingly grateful. And no, Martin has been on numerous series,
everything,
one after the other after the other.
And he's in the new Spider-Man. Yeah.
And John Francis Daly, he and his writing partner, Jonathan Goldstein. John was on Bones for years, but now they're very successful writer-directors.
I know, and that makes me really... I've always liked him. He's one of those people that just has a lovely way about them.
Mm-hmm.
And so seeing what he's been able to do behind the camera, it's exciting. I am very much, as you know, I'm very much a cheerleader. But it's because I love people who are creative, and I love seeing people who are talented do lots of different things. Mm-hmm. That's part of what I think is incredible about you, is just how many different kinds of things you do.
Ooh.
Because, well, no, you're wearing your DC Universe hat, but you're on the show DC Daily now.
Indeed.
Which our beloved friend Veronica Baker, who was on the show with her dad, Rick Baker, for a Father's Day episode, which was so much fun. But, you know, that's with her. And so there you are doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And still everything else.
Yes.
Like...
Hence the busyness.
Yeah.
Well, yes, the dirty secret of DC Daily is we tape them all in one day.
Yes, well.
So I do have the other 4 days.
Shocking.
Yes.
4 days of the week free to do other things. But no, I love being on DC Daily because at long last I'm being paid to talk about all the nerd stuff that I was talking about anyway.
That is a revolutionary turn of events.
Yes, it certainly
is. That can only be characterized that way.
In this life, I have won the lottery 18 times plus.
Well, good for you. Well, you've earned it and you deserve it.
Well, thank you.
You worked with Judd Apatow again on a show Jesse was just crazy about called Undeclared.
Oh, Undeclared.
God,
also,
that show was good.
Also a brilliant one and done. That show was also ahead of its time, could not find the right audience at the time, and it was so funny, and I thought it was one of the best takes on college, which, as you know, I'm very familiar with.
Yes, well.
I got to do two episodes of that show, and they were two of my most favorite episodes of television I've ever done.
It's another one, like you say, it's so good, and it's so well done. And it's like, as soon as I liked it, I always have that fear. I go, this is great. I'm going to kill it, aren't I?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love this show. It's going to die.
Yes.
But that's, at least though, it lives on. I mean, nowadays with YouTube and everything else, you can find stuff. That is part of why Freaks and Geeks is the phenomenon it is that it still exists.
It does. It exists. You know? For a long time, the only way to get it was on DVD the mail.
But they also did... elaborate special editions.
Oh, we did in the fall of 2003.
A yearbook style presentation.
Yep, in the fall of 2003, all the cast and creators and everybody got very involved, and we for months did audio commentary tracks, and we pulled out old pictures, and Gabe Sachs is the MVP of that. Writer, producer Gabe Sachs took so much behind the scenes video and photos. And those, so many of that is what's included in all those special editions.
How sad it would have been for him if he had done that for a show that no one cared about.
Yeah. And that's what people will say to me. Oh, do you ever get sick of people telling you about talking about Freaks and Geeks? And I would say no, because I'm really proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
I know how good it was.
Yeah.
And then I won't use an example show here because I don't want to put anyone down. But I would say, you know, it's not like I was on some forgettable 90s sitcom that I know was garbage, but people still like it. And I have to pretend that, oh, no, I know how good it was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm genuinely really proud of Freaks and Geeks, so it never gets old to me when people tell me how much they liked it.
Yeah.
What came next?
After Freaks and Geeks was, I did a couple of pilots that didn't go anywhere, and then I did Undeclared, and then my first on-camera role in a feature film, I should say, Not Another Teen Movie.
Oh, which is another... Talk about the photos that live on forever. And even you repost them.
I do.
The ninja...
I was the Asian wannabe.
When I was a teenager, we called that Weijian.
Oh.
That's all the kids who were obsessed with Dance Dance Revolution.
Sure.
And started wearing... They look like anime characters.
Yep.
But somehow in our school uniforms. It was an impressive task. Mm. But yeah, that's Wajian.
I understand. Wajians. Well, then I was ahead of the curve Wajian. And that was a wildly fun job for me because studio feature.
Mm-hmm.
Hooray. And it was silly fun, that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another one that stands out, you know, that people remember you for.
Well, yeah. Sure. It was one of the first of that genre.
Yes, so
genre
we were the first one
point.
That was not a scary movie parody.
Yes,
for
yes,
this
yes,
for
yes.
that generation.
Yeah,
Scary Movie had released two. They had released Scary Movie and then Scary Movie 2.
Yeah,
and then we came out on the heels mm-hmm. of Scary Movie 2, and we were the first non. You know, scary yeah. movie parody, and then the wheels really fell off the parody machine.
Mind you, for the Leonard Maltin's Movie Guide, I reviewed all of those.
I'm ever so sorry.
I've seen every single knockoff, ridiculous, yeah. you know, and yet I love you anyway. But yeah, but again, though, cast, that's part of what's so crazy
oh, yeah.
is early on with those, even the scary movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they had everybody.
They sure did.
They had everybody.
Yeah,
in
well, we had Captain America.
Yeah, you did.
Before he was Captain America.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, we did.
So, being with Kevin, mm-hmm. Kevin Pollak,
yes.
and welcoming so many guests of all shapes, colors, sizes,
mm-hmm.
and stripes,
mm-hmm.
Who are some of the ones that stand out to you? Who I'm putting you on the spot.
All right to do so. For me, it was never about. It's going to sound like I'm only seeing the most famous people,
mm-hmm.
but that's really not the case. For me, it was about connecting with, getting to really get in-depth stories from people who I had always looked up to, starting with Weird Al.
Mm-hmm.
I booked Weird Al on the show in our mm-hmm. first year. He and Kevin didn't really know each other, and I knew him a teeny little bit, and then I saw him at an event. I want to say it was at a little small premiere of the Patton Oswalt movie Big Fan. Mm-hmm. I want to say that's when it
that
was. I think
movie.
That's 2009. And so I saw Al there, and I told him we have this show I'm doing with Kevin Pollak, and you'd be a dream guest for us. Do you want to do it? And he said, sure. So getting Al to come on the show, and then he came on again some years later. But that first time we had him on the show was it just made my life. I mm-hmm. adore Al in every way you can safely, reasonably adore another person, and so that one was a big one. We had Tom Hanks mm. on the show. He did a 2.5-hour interview.
Jeez.
With Kevin. We played games. We got silly. We got very silly.
Are these all archived?
They are somewhere. I think they're all accessible for free. If not, you know, it's a nominal fee to get access to everything.
Mm-hmm.
We had Jane Campion on the show, and she was wonderful. She had amazing stories. My favorite thing, though, about having Jane Campion on the show was, you know, she's a very serious person. She directs these very heavy
yeah.
movies.
Yeah.
And so Kevin asks her, you know, have you, is there a lighter side to you? Would you ever think about doing a comedy? And then in this exact tone, she says, oh, well, I love to laugh. And it just, we still to this day, God bless her sweet heart, we still, when something funny happens and someone's not laughing, we say, do you love to laugh? Would you laugh? So, you know, having her in there and hearing these great stories, that was so much fun for us. I mean, it's but beyond the you know, the huge ones, we had Larry David on.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
Everything you expected it would be.
Okay.
We sit down, and here's my favorite part. We sit down, and about 15 minutes into this podcast that Larry had no idea what he was getting into,
yeah.
he stops and he looks at Kevin and he goes, you're very good at this. I didn't know what to expect, but you're very, very good at this.
Well, that's a plus.
Which is a huge plus. But imagine that happening. You know, we were 7 years into that.
Yeah, book. Yeah, yeah.
Imagine
yeah,
that
yeah.
happening to Johnny Carson on
right,
year 14
right,
of the Tonight
right.
Show. You know, where he's got Bob Hope on or something. And Hope, you know, you're very good at this. I didn't expect it. I didn't know. But here you are. That's why we all found it as funny as we did. There were so many great ones, so many ones where you wouldn't think, like we had Chris Pratt on
mm-hmm.
post Moneyball, middle of Parks and Rec, pre Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Right. right?
When only you and I knew his name. Yes.
When only serious Parks and Recs fans knew who he was.
Everwood.
And oh, okay.
Everwood.
And Everwood. I understand.
Deep cut. Everwood.
That is a deep cut. But we had him on, and we're talking about all this great stuff, and you know, he just has this amazing, you know, oh, we're gonna go get him kind of attitude. You know, whatever happens next, I don't know, we'll see. And we all saw.
He's done well, yes.
I think he's done okay.
He's done quite well for himself.
I think he's done all right.
But that's part of, though, because you've been working for such a long time and you're young, it's like you do come up with certain people, like Chris Evans being in Not Another Teen
Movie.
Sure. You know, it's the kind of thing. And people love to bring this stuff up like it was a secret.
Right.
Like people online will be like, oh my God, can't believe I found a video of so-and-so and this. You go, well, yeah, because they didn't just appear yesterday.
Right. They weren't just plucked out of obscurity.
That's it.
And given this giant role.
My dad and I always joke about the overnight, the 20-year overnight sensation.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what that is.
Yeah.
You know, even Jeff Ross being where he is now.
Sure.
Jeff has been doing this a very long time.
Very, very long time. Yeah. Jeff is 88 years old.
I know. He looks good, though.
He looks so good.
He looks good.
So good. Good gene. Can you give us an example of somebody who surprised you?
Yes. So I had the good fortune when Kevin started his work on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, we would still hold to doing an episode a week. Mm-hmm. So he was in New York a lot, which meant I got to fill in for him as guest host. And when I got to do that, I also then got to book a guest, which was tremendous fun and also made me realize why booking guests for a podcast is very difficult, and it's you're asking people to willingly sign up for jury duty. but I was so pleasantly surprised by so many of the guests I was able to book. But Maurice LaMarche, who is one of the great all-time voice actors.
Yes,
I mean when they build the Mount Rushmore to voice actors, he will be sandwiched between Mel Blanc and Frank Welker. In my humble opinion. Mm-hmm. And anyway.
To me, whatever else he does, and he's done so much.
So much.
He will always be that voice of Orson Welles in Pinky and the Brain.
Oh, yes.
And it just makes me laugh every single time.
And having him on, I mean, I'd met him here and there, and I knew he's a jovial guy, but the stories he had were eye-opening, were phenomenal. I don't want to spoil it, and it is not my story to retell, but he has a family history thing that is very dark that he was more than happy to talk about. I'm very glad that he did. But it comes towards the end of our very lengthy chat, and it gets capped by him meeting the Dalai Lama.
Oh, my.
So I hate to tease people. But again, it is not my story to tell, and I would not do a good job of retelling it. So I say, please hunt down me interviewing Maurice LaMarche. And if you don't want to sit through the whole thing, that's fine. Skip to about the last half hour and catch that story, because it is one of the truly great stories I've ever heard about overcoming a real personal tragedy and learning how to live with that sort of thing in a way that changed me after having heard him tell that story.
Wow. All right. That's a big buildup. I'm sure the payoff.
I really
is
hope so. For the people
who are
willing to do the homework and look that up, I think it will be worth it to them.
Now, Jesse said that you also had been working with the USO.
Almost the USO. Oh. It's a company that is like the USO. It's called Navy Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Less name recognition in the USO, but equally as important. Mm-hmm. And so they are in charge of booking entertainment and what have you for all of our brave men and women overseas, stationed all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so our pal, Thomas Ian Nicholas, also known as Henry Roan Gardner, Rookie of the Year.
I wish we don't know each other.
Oh, you don't?
No.
I thought for sure you guys did.
You would think, but no.
Well, I'm going to fix this.
I can't wait.
So Tom and I know each other for a long time now, and back earlier this year, he got booked through Navy Entertainment to go do some entertaining down in Guantanamo Bay at the naval base there. And they wanted They asked Tom if he could maybe get another American Pie cast member to come with him. They would screen the movie for the troops. They would do a, you know, a fun Q&A. Maybe we'd do some trivia. We'd do a, you know, a signing. We'd take pictures with everyone. Oh, see if you can get somebody else from the movie. And he could not get anyone else from the movie willing to go down to Guantanamo Bay with him, not because they had any aversion to Guantanamo Bay, but because that naval base specifically is notoriously difficult to get in and out of. Specifically out of. Hey! They don't allow civilian aircraft in and out of there. So that it has to all be military chartered aircraft with civilians cleared on it, and they only allow so many of those in a week. So to go there, the earliest you can go is you have to go on like a Wednesday or a Thursday, and then the earliest you can leave is Tuesday. So it's more than just, oh, we'll fly you in.
A glorious week in Guantanamo.
Pretty much, yeah. It's more than, oh, we'll fly you in, you'll do the show, and we'll fly you out. Right. It's a commitment.
Yeah.
And lucky for him, I wasn't doing much that week. So he asked me, hey, man, do you want to go? Maybe we'll show Not Another Teen Movie after American Pie. You know, I'm sure the troops will be just as happy to, you know, to see you.
Oh,
and I
yeah.
said, sure, man. That sounds like a great job. I'd love to do it. And so I accompanied him. But the people at Navy Entertainment either didn't get the memo or refused to acknowledge the memo because we were brought in as Thomas Ian Nicholas and Sam Levine from American Pie.
Yep. Ah.
And so much so, they gave me these little cards, these little 5x7 cards that had my picture next to American Pie.
Oh, gosh.
So that I could sign for the troops. So we decided on the flight down there, I said, if anyone asks, I'm just going to say I played Stifler's younger brother.
Yes.
Because that actor was Eli Marienthal, and he was terrific, but I'd be willing to bet most people could not tell us apart if they didn't know in the first place. So I came out ahead on that bet.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah, when people are like, oh, wait, who'd you play in the movie? Stifler's younger brother?
Oh,
right
oh,
on, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool, man.
Yeah.
Glad you could make it.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah, I didn't know that was you. Yep.
But you had one hell of an adventure down there.
Oh,
it
was
really
amazing what we saw and did down there. I will gladly tell you. So we had this brilliant luck where our first few days we had many things to do, but then we had kind of an off day. And so the Navy people give us a chaperone. And so she had her own vehicle on the base, and so she's sort of driving us around, showing us all the, you know, interesting sites like, you know, 100-year-old lighthouses, and oh, and here's the barracks, and there's, you know, old Camp X-Ray, which was where right after 9/11 they brought all those detainees to, and it got shut down, quite notoriously shut down. And so we're sort of wandering around, seeing all this very safe. Visitor stuff, and then we run into the third in command there, a really great guy named Nick Messina, and he sees us, and he kind of recognizes us and asks, so what are you guys up to? And we say, oh, we're just getting the tour from, you know, our Navy chaperone, and he says, oh, well, what are you guys doing in like an hour? I got free time. I could take you on the VIP private tour. So we say, nothing, tell us when and where to meet you. So then an hour later, we hook up with him, and then, you know, we're in his car now, and we roll up to an area that has every sign in the world saying, keep out, turn away, don't even bother. And we roll up to it, and the MPs are there, and he just says, yeah, no, these guys are with me. Yes, sir, right away. They pull that gate up, and then we go into the totally private area of Guantanamo Bay. We got to see these untouched virgin beaches that they have there, where I think I'm getting this right, one of Columbus's ships actually docked there before they got back on the ships and went up further to the mainland. We saw the actual ground where the Civil War happened, the Spanish-American War rather happened, where the Americans took Guantanamo Bay from the Spanish, because it was all about a well. Whoever controlled the freshwater well controlled Guantanamo Bay.
Sure.
And so there was a battle there that ensued, and we learned all this amazing history about how they were essentially using semaphore to relay to the troops on the ground, because the Spanish fighters started dressing in American uniforms, army uniforms so that the snipers from afar wouldn't know who to shoot at.
Oh, man.
And so then the guys on the ground were identifying them and then signaling to the guys on the hill. It was quite a battle, and I knew nothing about it. Now, I mean, granted, you don't have to go to Guantanamo Bay to learn that, but for me, I'm always going to associate that with being there, being on the actual area where that battle was taking place. And then the real dark one was we saw the cemetery there. And the cemetery is full of Cuban exiles who in the 1960s, in the early 1960s, when the gates were open between Guantanamo Bay Naval Base and Cuba, and all the people that worked there were Cubans who lived in Cuba, when it started to get real bad and Castro was yanking people who worked there out of their homes and interrogating them, expecting them to have some sort of American military intelligence that they could just hand over. It started to get real bad, and there was a lot of talk, I think they're going to close those gates. They might close those gates. And so family members who had family who worked there, they said, don't come back. Go into work tomorrow and tell them you want to stay because it's bad here, and we want you. You're our young son. We want you to go and not have to deal with what we're dealing with right now with this horrible regime. And so they did. Hundreds and hundreds of Cuban exiles lived on this base for the remainder of their lives. And a lot of them were given the opportunity to leave the base and go to the U.S. and live a life there. And they said, no, my family is on this island. I grew up on this island. Even though I can't leave the base and go see them, it's important to me to know I'm on the same island as them. And so they lived the rest of their lives there. They made their own little community on the base. And so many of them
Which is American territory?
It is American territory. And it's one of those things where it's something like the lease agreement that the U.S. has with Cuba. It says something like it's an American territory, but the U.S. courts have sovereignty, or I might be reversing that. But whatever it is, it and it alone lives in this perfectly gray legal area, which is how they are able to operate the prison that they have there. Mm-hmm. We did not go into the prison. We saw the prison from afar. I couldn't tell you anything about it other than so after the horrible stuff that happened at Camp X-Ray, they made a new prison where they were keeping all the detainees. And then I guess several years ago, an international organization came in and looked at it and said, I don't know, these facilities, they could be better. So the U.S. spent a lot of money and built a brand new state-of-the-art holding facility, and they transferred all the detainees over to that. And it was built right next door to the old prison. So now the old prison is where the military made their barracks.
Hmm.
Just in case anyone's wondering how that goes, if you're in the service. And when I tell that story to people who are in the service, they all say, yep, sounds exactly right.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah.
How many servicemen and women
are there currently? I believe there's about 2,000 I think it's more than that. I think it's 2,000 servicemen and women, and 6,000 total is the amount of people living there because all their families – many of their families live there with them.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there are people who just work there who are not in the military. So there's about 6,000 people, I believe, there. At its most, right after 9/11, there were 10,000 people serviced there.
Man,
it's 45 square miles. It's a lot bigger than you think it is.
Huh?
Wow.
Yeah.
What an adventure.
Oh, it was an adventure for a lifetime. I'm so grateful to Tom. I'm so grateful to Navy Entertainment for inviting us and running into Nick Messina. I want to say Commander. If he's not a Commander, I'm giving him that title.
Right.
Because he was a submarine Commander before he got stationed on land at Gitmo. You know, and he'd been submerged for like 71 days. Oh. And then he comes up and they say, yep, you're getting restationed. Now he's at Gitmo.
I have been in the ocean.
Yeah.
I've been under the sea.
And those guys, they love it. Wow. It is a different mentality, the submarine people.
Man.
I don't know the proper terminology. I was here to bring it back to movies. I got the biggest kick out of talking to Commander Messina about The Hunt for Red October. Because that is the extent of my submarine knowledge.
Right.
And so I said, have you ever done an emergency blow? And he said, oh, yeah, those are not fun. That's when you are basically at the bottom of the ocean floor, and as fast as you can, you got to go to the surface. And, you know, you're not allowed to do it as a drill more than once every 18 months or something, because you can get the bends.
You can die.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's why scuba divers have to come up slowly.
Very slowly, die. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes if there's a problem with the vessel or you're evading something and you got no choice. And so, yeah, they did like a, I'm going to get the numbers wrong, but like a, you know, a 4,000 foot rise to the surface in like 11 seconds.
Oh, man.
I'm sure that's wrong. It can't be that fast.
No,
let's say 30 seconds. I don't know.
We're spending much time talking about real life.
I'm so sorry. But that's a scene that happens in The Hunt for Red October, and I wanted to know what in that movie is real. And then I got to meet members of the JAG Corps. Mm.
Oh.
And so on behalf of Kevin Pollak, I said, let's talk A Few Good Men. And I wanted to know what's real, what was he fudging? Right. And they basically said, Kathy putting Jessup on the stand when he didn't really have firm evidence to do so, when Kathy knew he was going on a fishing expedition, that would have ended so badly for Kathy. He would have been court-martialed. He would have been disbarred. He would have spent the next several years in military, police holding. It would have been real, real bad for him.
All right. I'm going to throw you something. We're going to take back to Inglourious Basterds.
Okay.
You have had an experience very few people, relatively speaking, have had. You've been directed by Quentin Tarantino.
I have indeed.
Tell us about
as two characters.
Oh, you know your trivia.
Yes.
Tell us about what he's like on the day, on the set.
Quentin is, and I will tell anyone this, he is the mad genius.
Mm-hmm.
If you sat down and you thought your perfect vision of what is Tarantino like on set when he's frantic and directing, it's everything that you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
He is giddy when he is on a set. He is a kid in a candy shop every single day he's there. And he brings this infectious energy to everyone else. Our first day, actually long before our first day, we got to do about 2 full weeks of rehearsals on this movie, which anyone who knows the film business, that is pretty unheard of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that means the studio is paying for everyone to be there and you are not rolling a frame of film. But Quentin can get that. So he wanted 2 weeks of rehearsal, and we began those rehearsals with a table read where he assembled everyone in the cast on a big soundstage along this giant series of tables, because he wanted to hear the script read out loud all as one. And he opened that by reading from a book by Joseph Mankiewicz about filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the name of the book, but there's a passage in there where he talks about ever since the first cavemen took a bird feather and stuck it between their butt cheeks and squawked around, we have had storytelling. And it has evolved with us as we have evolved as a people. But at the end of the day, no matter what the technology is, we are all cavemen with bird feathers sticking out of our butts.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that is how I go into every project. It's all about the story we want to tell. We are storytellers. That is what we are on this earth to do, tell stories. And I need to know that all of you have that same level of passion that I do, and that all of you are going to give me 100% of what you are capable of giving me between action and cut. And if I feel for a second like you are not giving me 100%, you are free to get the F off of my set. He didn't say F. and he said, if you feel like you can, you're the kind of guy who wants to phone it in one day, if all your stuff's off camera, the door's over there. This is not a place for casual acting.
Mm-hmm.
I want everything from you all the time. And why? Because we love making movies. He would say that on set 30 times a day.
Hmm.
You know, after the end of a take we've been working on for 2 hours, where we're doing take after take after take to get it just right, he would say, cut, that was perfect, absolutely perfect, but we're going to do it one more time. And why? And then in unison, everyone is required to say, because we love making movies. And that's one of many
perfect.
Things.
That's so perfectly.
That's got to be infectious.
I mean, it is infectious, and that's how he transfers that infection of how much he loves being on set and loves getting to craft stories to everyone else there, no matter what their job is. Everyone is as excited as Quentin to be on those sets and do that. And I'll give you one more great story about his actual directing style. Mm-hmm. So one of the first real times you see the Bastards in action, we've got those Nazi soldiers in that ditch. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got them at gunpoint. It's right before poor Sergeant Ratchman meets his end to the baseball bat of Donowitz.
Spoiler alert.
The movie's 10 years old.
Yeah, exactly. Right. At this point.
That scene was much longer in the script. We shot a much longer version, but understandably, things get cut in movies. So that scene sort of starts where, or in the middle of the scene, that's where Brad Pitt, Aldo Raine, says to me, "Hey, Hirschberg, why don't you send over that Kraut sergeant?" And that's Sergeant Ratchman, played by the magnificent Richard Sammel. Mm-hmm. And so he's on his knees, and I've got a gun on him. And a rifle at his back. And he says, "Send over that Kraut sergeant." And then I lean over and say, "That means you, Cupcake." And he doesn't budge. And then I bash him in the back of the head with the butt of my rifle. And he still doesn't move. And then I grab him by the hair and I yank him up to his feet. And he turns around and he's supposed to look at me. And, you know, and I have this gun pointed at him and I say, "When the sergeant says move, or when the lieutenant says move, you move." And then he stares at me, and then he walks away. And then you know how the rest of the scene plays out. So we go to do that in the wide. And the camera is up on the top of the ridge of that ditch, and Quentin is behind the camera. So he's not down there with us. He's considerable. It takes several minutes because you got to go around this thing, find a ladder, and climb down there. So we go to do the take the first time, and it happens basically just as I described it. And then Quentin says, cut, cut, cut. And 90 seconds later, he comes running down there, and he comes over to me, and he puts his arm around me, and he pulls me away from everyone. He goes, "Listen, man, listen. You're not a big guy. Okay, and I know you know that, and your soldiers know that, and Ratchman knows that. Okay, and not only are you not a big guy, you're a Jew. You're an American Jew. This guy is a Nazi. He wants to eradicate your people from the face of the earth, and you are insulting him. You're calling him Cupcake. You're hitting him with your gun. You are yanking on his hair." And when he turns around and stares at you, the only thing in the world stopping him from killing you right there with his bare hands is the fact that you're holding the gun and he's not. And even if he reached for the gun, he knows there's 8 other guns on him. He's never going to get out of there alive. That's the only thing stopping him. So I need to know from you that you want him to reach for that gun. It would be your best day if you could insult him enough and stare at him condescendingly enough that he dares to reach for the gun so you could blow a hole in his chest. I need to feel that from you. I said, "Dude, you got it." And then he goes over and he pulls Richard aside. And then he talks to him for 3 minutes and I have no idea what they're talking about. And then he says, okay, nobody talk. Position, go back to your first position, all right. And then he runs back up to the top. He says, "Add action." And then we do the second take. And this time, I pull him to his feet, and he turns around, and the two of us stare at each other. And I say, "When the lieutenant says you move, you move." And he's staring at me, and he's not moving. And I poke him in the chest with my rifle. And I look at him, and I say, "What the F are you going to do? Go over to the lieutenant." And he stares for a few more seconds, and then he readjusts his jacket, and he walks over, and he goes in front, and then the rest of the scene plays out for a few seconds, and then Quentin screams, cut, that was brilliant, that was amazing! And so then I walk over, and I say, "Richard, what did he say to you?" And he said, "Oh, well, he said a lot of really bad things about how the Nazis felt about the Jews." And then he said that if I felt like I could grab that gun from you, if I felt like you didn't mean it, that you wouldn't really kill me, that I should try to grab the gun from you,
huh.
And then that would be the scene. Mm-hmm. And then we'd rewrite the rest of it after that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's unbelievable.
That's electrifying.
Who else is getting away with that as a director? Who else has the ability to craft a scene between two actors without having them talk to each other like that?
Yeah.
And so that's my favorite Quentin story about him as a director.
Man.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Thanks.
It's a good one.
What a story. What a memory.
Oh, yeah. Well.
To cherish
I
mean, as
yes,
an actor.
Yes, no, that one, yeah. One of these days I'll figure out what to do with it, but I kept a video diary.
Oh my!
That I recorded on my laptop every night while we were shooting, mm-hmm. You know. And some days I've rewatched some of those old videos, and they're rough because I can tell I've been awake for 22 hours. By the time I get back to the room, shooting all day, my eyes are bloodshot, my voice is hoarse, and I'm just trying to hit like the big things. Oh, and this happened today, and somebody told this great joke at lunch, and oh my God, it was a person who'd never told a joke the entire run of the show. It was Diane Kruger, and and we all loved the joke so much, and I never wanted to forget it.
Wow. Yeah. Listen, for people who never heard of or never played the Leonard Maltin game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying this in a third person kind of way.
Sure. Right. It's the name of the game. It happens to share your name, but that's the name of the game.
Doug Benson invented it for his podcast, Doug Loves Movies. I want to give people a glimpse of, or at least a sample of, your incredible abilities.
You're very sweet.
So if I say Reservoir Dogs to you, now, if we were playing the game, what we would do is, you would bid on how many names
it's,
you need.
It's name that tune,
right?
But instead of songs and notes, it's movie titles and actors.
Right. Except that when you bid on the names, Doug would say, all right, Leonard lists 11 cast members in his review for this movie. How many names do you think you need to identify the movie?
Right.
But he's going to give you the names in reverse
order. From the lowest credited, smallest role to the lead roles.
Right. You were able to sometimes outbid your fellow contestants by going into negative numbers.
Right. When I already feel like I know what the movie was.
Right.
And so then I would name the movie and then I would start going in correct order from the top of the list down.
All right. So if I say Reservoir Dogs to you.
I would feel very safe in saying negative one.
Mm-hmm.
I would feel pretty safe in saying negative two.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, then it starts to get weird. I would say, obviously, Harvey Keitel's got to be number one, and I'm guessing Tim Roth was number two. But you never know. I would say, you never know with Leonard. You never know. Because sometimes you would go in an order different than the opening credits order. Sometimes you would veer towards the closing credits order, which answered the very difficult question for you over the years of where do you put the and credit?
That's right. And I did that arbitrarily.
Right.
Because if it's and Robert Redford.
Exactly.
But it's Robert Redford.
But it's Robert Redford.
You're not putting him last.
You're not going to put him last.
Right.
In the
you're not going to put him eighth named.
Right. And our friends at IMDb believe in using in order of appearance.
Right.
Yes.
Which I don't favor.
Well, it would be order of – in credits listed order.
That's right.
Is,
that's right. So – but they will do it in whatever order the studio has issued.
And sometimes the studio will do an order of appearance. Yeah.
So an order of appearance means that the first name you see on an IMDb listing will be – Woman in Grocery Store.
Exactly.
Which is exactly what we want. Right.
Yeah.
It's not Jennifer Lawrence.
Right.
It was top billed in the movie. It's Woman in Grocery Store.
Right.
Then Cashier.
Right. I think fewer movies do that nowadays, but it was commonplace in the in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's why I arbitrarily would take Robert Redford and give him like third or fourth billing.
Sure.
In a movie where he had an and credit.
Right.
What did I see last? I saw a movie last week that had three and. Oh, the Goldfinch.
Oh,
has three or maybe four and credits.
Oh boy.
Nicole Kidman is an and credit.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Because it's a good supporting role, but it is a supporting role.
Okay.
All the at least three of the principals in the movie get that kind of credit, which would have driven all of us crazy. You and me both.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is an amazing facility that you have for remembering this stuff. And you corrected me when we were still publishing the book. You corrected me on Superman.
Oh, That's right.
The Christopher Reeve Superman.
Yes.
Because I incorrectly listed Christopher Reeve first.
Well,
and you said to me, well, Marlon Brando got top billing.
And then Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it's funny, of all movies you could have mentioned, I watched that last night.
Oh, my.
For my DC job. Mm-hmm. And not only is Christopher Reeve billed below Brando and Hackman, it's Brando, Hackman, and then such and such studio presents Superman, and then Christopher Reeve. You know, a Richard Donner film starring Christopher Reeve. I was about to say only in the 70s, but no, if you think about Batman and Robin from 1997, Schwarzenegger is billed over George Clooney.
Huh. Hmm.
He's Batman.
He's
How can he not be top billed?
Yep.
Well,
when you got Schwarzenegger,
I guess,
and you want Schwarzenegger and his agents play hardball, I guess he's going to be top billed.
Stay cool. Oh, every scene Stay Schwarzenegger cool. has
chill,
in that movie.
Chill out.
Every single one is hilarious. Man.
You know what killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age.
That's my, oh Lord. Now, but you've also done like Drunk History.
Yeah.
You are very, I said to you before we started that for me, if someone doesn't know / hasn't worked with you or Clifton Collins Jr., they don't exist.
I see.
Is how I feel.
This is a fellow here who made a guest appearance on That's So Raven.
This is true.
You know, you have a broad, you cut a broad swath.
I do indeed.
Through the world of show business.
Yes, the bread and butter of my career has probably been guest starring roles on television shows. Mm-hmm. And so when someone says, you know, when I do these conventions, oh, what have I seen you on in terms of guest starring roles? I just say, every show you've ever watched.
That's right.
Oh.
It's especially if you were watching in the aughts.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And then I always also like to throw in every show you've never heard of. Every show that was one season and done, I was on. That is a long list.
Yes. But yeah, like Drunk History. I know you've done stuff with them before. Comedy Bang. All those. Every time I see a photo of you with someone, I go, of course Sam knows that person. Mm-hmm. Of course he does.
Well, that's what I tell people when they ask for, you know, when young people say, oh, I want to move to LA and start, you know, try acting. What's your advice? And my advice is always the same, which is don't give up, because the longer you stay here, the more connections you will make.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, some of the best jobs I've had in the last 10 years did not come from auditions. They came from connections that I made during the first 10 years.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, you're in the Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh, yeah.
10 year, which is great. But
talk about a cast.
Yeah. Oh. Ridiculous.
I mean, that really is incredible.
Oh, those
and
comedy
and
legends.
Michael Showalter and David Wayne have gotten more mileage out of that
concept. Oh, they sure have.
Than anyone would think possible.
Yeah. And that actually is my first film, but in voice only. Mm-hmm. Is the original Wet Hot American Summer.
Huh. Yeah. Wow.
An off-camera voice?
No. I was given the task...
He's Stifler's little brother.
Uh-huh. Well done.
Thank you.
I was given the task of redubbing the dialogue for one of the on-camera actors who plays the camp DJ of the camp radio station. Okay. So a large part of the time when you're hearing his voice, it is off-camera. Mm-hmm. You're just hearing him supposedly, you know, over the radio.
Mm-hmm.
But then he does have a whole bunch of scenes where he is on camera. Mm-hmm. And I had auditioned for that role by sending VHS tapes.
Attaboy.
From my home in Los Angeles to David Wayne in New York back in the summer of 2000. Or not even, it was the spring of 2000. And ultimately, I sent him a series of tapes. I'd send him one, he'd call me and give me notes, I'd make another. And I think we did that three times and then didn't happen. But then he called me 6 months later and said, listen, man, you know, some of the movie works great, some of it we're having some issues with. Can I fly to New York and maybe just have you dub some of these lines?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it would just be a handful of lines, but I get to New York and I realize it's an entire role that is largely on camera.
Oh my.
And I mean, I feel very bad for the young man whose voice I was dubbing. Mm-hmm. To my knowledge, he's doing just fine. He's gone on and acted in plenty of other things. Mm-hmm. But still, that was, for better or worse, my first movie. And so then I did that again when they did the first Netflix redo of that series, First Day of Camp,
right,
which was a prequel series. Mm-hmm. I came back and voiced the second young actor who they got to do the prequel version of Artie the Camp DJ. And then when they did 10 years later, at long last, I got to play on-screen Artie.
So you made it.
I really did.
You made it, kid.
It was about time. My goodness.
A 16-year journey that was well worth it.
Wild.
Boy.
It's just wild. And then you also, I'm very proud, you do some really incredible charity work.
Oh.
And I love that you do that. Again, with some phenomenally people.
Believe me, the charity is that they let me be a part of that to help them raise money. Yes, I think you're referring to the Big Slick Kansas City charity that I've been a part of now for 10 years. The charity itself, no, I've been a part of it for 9 years. The charity is 10 years old. Mm-hmm. I missed the very first one, I'm sorry to say. But that is a charity in Kansas City benefiting Children's Mercy Hospital of Kansas City, which is truly one of the most noble organizations I have ever known. They will treat pediatric cancer free of charge. They are doing experimental therapies and procedures there, and they are largely philanthropically funded. So this charity is a very important part of their ability to function as well as they do. And the five guys whose charity it is are all Kansas City boys: Paul Rudd, Jason Sudeikis, Rob Riggle, Eric Stonestreet, and David Koechner. And these are wonderful guys. And they, every year in June, they gather up their idiot Hollywood friends and they get us on planes and we fly into Kansas City and we do a whole weekend of charity stuff with the Kansas City Royals. We played the Sprint Center this year with this big show. I mean, they have amazing, amazing people who come out and support this charity. We visit the hospital. We visit the kids. We hang out with the doctors and the nurses and the families. And it is so meaningful to all of us because we know where this money is going. Mm-hmm. And this last year alone, we raised $2.5 million in one weekend.
Gosh.
Every year.
In one weekend?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. And the last several years, we've raised nearly $2 million. I think the year nine, we raised $2 million. Year eight, it was maybe 1.7. It's been over $1 million at least the last 5 or 6 years. Every single
weekend.
And
the photos and the videos that come out of it.
Oh.
And all of you are having clearly such a good time, or you're just great actors.
Oh no, we're having fun.
I mean, you're all just in the best spirits and for the best possible cause. And you do other charity work too, but that's a big one that is so worthwhile and something I want to make sure lots of people know about.
Oh, yes, thank you. I think bigslickkc.org is the website, and you can donate year-round.
Well, gee, Sam, it's been so nice having you here.
Aww.
And talking about all the stuff that you are part of and have been part of, and you're a good storyteller to boot.
Oh, thanks, Leonard.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. I mean, you know, not everybody has the ability to sort of take you into the you took us to that location. You did.
We were in a ditch, Sammy.
We were in a ditch.
That's what I aim for.
Yeah. But, well, it's just been a pleasure to have you.
The pleasure is always all mine.
Guest.
I adore the two of you more than you know. All right, let's go on a road trip. I don't care.
Let's do it.
I don't care.
Okay.
And people,
I'll hire the bus.
Yeah, okay, right? Oh, great. Don't put him in charge of anything.
Okay,
no, great.
It won't end well
for
us.
That would be good advice.
Thank you. But you're on DC Daily
now.
Yes,
DC Daily on DCUniverse.com. Yes. If you are a DC fan of any level, you owe it to yourself to check out DCUniverse.com. You can get a 7-day free trial, see everything great that we have to offer on the site, including DC Daily. And hey, if you feel like, oh, I love all this stuff, but I don't want to spend money, DC Daily is in front of the paywall.
Hey!
You can watch us 5 days a week at 6 o'clock Eastern.
And you've got a whole bunch of good people. Clark Wolf.
Oh, yeah. Clark Wolf, Hector Navarro.
I love Hector.
Amy Dallin, Sam Humphries. Who am I forgetting? I know. Whitney Moore.
Yeah.
We have so many wonderful people that stop by. Echo Kellum stops by from time to time.
Echo Kellum, who was my waiter at Umami. This is one of those moments. I'm sorry. This is one of those very, very LA moments. I remember him because his name's Echo.
Yeah.
And he's huge.
He's
and
a
has
very
a,
tall man.
This incredible Afro situation happening. And I just remember going, he's a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
You're an actor? Yeah, that's good. Here we are.
Yep, a couple years later.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Man, so you've got that going, and then you're always doing different projects, whether it's TV or film.
And
or
where and how can people follow you?
Oh, you can follow me on the two big socials, Instagram and Twitter, both the same handle, at Sam Levine. That's SAMMLEVINE.
Oh, mm-hmm. I always say Samama.
Yeah, Samama.
Samama. And that way people spell it rubber right.
Well, and thank you. Where would people be looking for us, Jesse?
We're with Sam. You're at Leonard Maltin, and I'm at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and on Instagram. And you can always go to leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews and book roundups and all kinds of good stuff. We also now have a Patreon, which we lovingly call Maltreon.
Oh.
Maltreon. Join us, Maltreon. It's a cult.
So you go to Patreon.
You can do it. Patreon.com/Maltin on Movies.
That's where you find us. And thank you for your support. We really appreciate that. And we always appreciate you tuning in. We'll see you again next week, folks. Bye-bye. Today's episode of Maltin on Movies is brought to you by Legion M, the world's first fan-owned entertainment company. If you love movies as much as we do, why not own a piece of them? Find out more at www.legionm.com.